Hello, everyone. My name is Karma Harris, and I'm a public health consultant with the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors, also known as NACDD for short. I've had the privilege over the last few years of leading and managing the Reaching People with Disabilities Through Healthy Communities project, which is a project funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. This project really builds upon a previous Healthy Communities model used by NACDD and was modified to consist of six phases that really are a crucial part of the inclusive healthy community change process that are focused on improving the health and well-being of people with disabilities. These phases are: phase one is the commitment phase, phase two is the assessment and training phase, phase three is the prioritization and planning phase, phase four is implementation, phase five is evaluation, and phase six is communication and dissemination. This podcast today will feature another one of our state expert advisors, and our conversation will revolve around phase two, which is the assessment and training phase. This phase consisted of in-person and virtual trainings about the project's purpose, activities, and the phased approach that we use for the project, as well as an importance for the need in completing a community health assessment. So to help us learn more about the assessment and training phase two of the project, the Oregon State Expert Advisor, Ms. Angela Weaver, is here with us today. Angela works for the Oregon Office on Disability and Health, which is at the Oregon Health and Science University. So, Angela, welcome to today's discussion. I know we've got a lot to dive into with our phase two on assessment and training for inclusive healthy communities. But first, just tell us a little bit about your specific job title and your role with the Oregon Office on Disability and Health.
Well, hi, Karma, and it's great to be here with you today to talk about phase two. So I am the program manager for the Oregon Office on Disability and Health, or what we say is OODH. And I first and foremost get to work with a wonderful team, and I also oversee the day-to-day operations of the office, which includes a lot of administrative tasks such as hiring of new staff and managing staff, overseeing the budget, and writing our various reports to our funder. And I also serve on a variety of state-level councils, committees, and commissions.
Great. So just as a reminder to our listeners who might have tuned in to our first session, we are going to have each of the state expert advisors really tell us about their two communities. And the reason why is because we want our listeners to kind of learn who we worked with within each of our five states. So Angela, to that end, tell us a little bit about the two communities that you selected for the project and maybe a little about each for our listeners so they get to know our two Oregon communities.
Sure. I'll first describe the counties and the communities we worked with. In Oregon, we typically have three types of counties. So we have urban, rural, and frontier. And overall, Oregon is a very rural state. And so for this project, we really wanted to bring the project to our rural communities. And so we chose Benton County and Umatilla County. I'll describe Benton County first. Benton County is considered a rural county, even though it has a densely populated urban area around its largest city, which is Corvallis. But the county overall has a population of about 91,000. And Benton County is located 100 miles south of Portland and is home to Oregon State University, which is one of Oregon's largest universities. And then Umatilla County is located east of Portland about 220 miles. And it's considered a rural county as well, with a population a bit over 17,000. And Umatilla County is the home of the city of Pendleton. And Umatilla County definitely has a more rural and small town feel to it, and it's surrounded almost entirely by frontier counties. So that's a little look at our two counties, and then I'll share with you the process that we took to choose our two counties. So first of all, we met with our state-level public health and healthy communities representatives, and we consulted with them, and we discussed the two counties along with, you know, other rural counties, and we wanted to, you know, choose the best candidates. And so the things that we looked at were overall population size, the population of people with disabilities and older adults. We also looked at their local public health department's current participation within their healthy communities initiatives. We also wanted to look at the prevalence of people experiencing a variety of chronic health conditions. And when we took all that information, we really wanted to think about which counties would have a significant benefit to this project. And in that case, we also looked at seeing which counties could really benefit from a disability or inclusion lens. So again, we identified Benton and Umatilla County, and we contacted our key partners in both of those counties, and they agreed to participate. So we were able to move forward with those counties.
So So again, phase two is assessment and training. And this first part of the conversation, I want to dedicate to just the training part. So as some background for our listeners, we brought the state expert advisors from the 5 state and the community coaches from the 10 communities together in person for a 2-day training summit to officially launch this project and provide, you know, the needed project background and training. And we did this on the campus of our project partners at the National Center for Health, Physical Activity and Disability, or NCPAD for short. So our listeners will hear a lot about NCPAD integrated throughout each of these podcast series. And so this in-person initial project kickoff, or the training summit as we called it, was really critical in continuing relationship building amongst the various partners, as well as through all of us learning together about the expectations of the project. And so as this project moved forward, NACDD continued providing project training through virtual technical assistance activities such as webinars or conference calls, or creating a peer learning network for the state expert advisors and the community coaches. And we did this throughout the project period because we feel like training should be ongoing. And so if you were to look at the 6-phase model on paper, it really looks like it flows nicely in the circle from one phase to another. But it's really important to note that some activities are linear or circular in this project process and others are not. And so one of the activities that really is not linear that gets sprinkled throughout the model is this idea of project training and project technical assistance and project support. And so NACDD worked really hard to create avenues for this type of virtual engagement and ongoing learning for the state and community participants throughout each project phase and process. And so, Angela, really thinking about the training part of the assessment and training phase two, talk to us a little bit about what you thought some of the biggest benefits were in bringing the state and community partners together in person at the kickoff summit.
Yeah, sure. The kickoff summit was wonderful for many reasons, but one thing for sure is it was invaluable to bring together all the state partners into, you know, one room. And the benefits of that is not only did it accelerate the in-person relationship building within my state, but it was also helpful to meet partners from the other 4 states. And again, just to be in the same room, to learn everything together at the same speed and to ask questions and to learn from one another was really, really valuable. And one thing is, you know, specifically I'm thinking about was that with regards to the community health assessment, we were able to, you know, practice hands-on with the tool, with the assessment tool. And I think that was definitely very beneficial, because I think if to learn that virtually, like through a webinar or something, might have been more difficult, to be able to work with our teams and have that hands-on experience was great. And I'd like to give you an example, too, of our post-training webinars that were provided as well, because those were also really beneficial. One that I specifically think about that was soon after the summit was one where the NACDD team provided additional review and examples on how the health assessment data flows throughout the project. So once it's captured through the assessment process, just understanding the flow of the data really helps give broad perspective on the project as a whole and the expected outcomes. That webinar, of course, all the webinars were great, but that webinar specifically sticks out because it just gives you that so aha moments of how this all fits together. Another thing that I know our team felt in Oregon, because we had discussions about it as well, is we also really enjoyed sharing our successes and lessons learned, as well as learning from other states when they shared. So the webinars were a great venue for that as well.
Having this ongoing education and engagement and training throughout the entire project process, I think, really contributed in a positive way to our successes and lessons learned. So I couldn't agree more. And thinking about the other aspect of this phase, the assessment phase, the second important activity is conducting a community health assessment. And anytime you do any type of healthy communities project, you want to do a community health assessment of some sort. So a community health assessment is an important step in this inclusive healthy communities model, because it really provides us with a snapshot of a community's assets and barriers to healthy living. So it gives community coalitions baseline data. It identifies any local assets to build upon or existing gaps that need to be addressed. And it really helps the community coalitions and the community coaches begin to see where they should start investing their resources and setting their priorities for healthy living as they move forward in the project process. So a community health assessment should really examine all the sectors within a community so that coalitions can really then identify and determine where in which sectors they should initiate some of these improvements. And so while there are several different community health assessment tools that can be used for healthy communities projects, the one that we chose to use for this project is one that is called the Community Health Inclusion Index, or the CHI for short. We chose the CHI because it is one of a few tools out there that intentionally uses a disability inclusion lens for assessing healthy living strategies such as healthy eating and physical activity within five different community sectors. And so the CHI really looked at the community at large sector, community institutions and organizations, schools, work sites, and healthcare. And it really kind of had a two-part component where you looked at organizations and you assessed them via a survey, and then you also were able to actually assess the environment that the organizations have, that built environment. So to give our listeners an example of a type of inclusive question that might be asked in an inclusive community health assessment like the CHI, I like to use the example of a fitness center. So when you are looking at a fitness center, and you are considering that fitness center for persons who might have a mobility limitation of some sort, it's important to consider proper flow and spacing of exercise equipment in the gym setting so that people who might use an assistive device of some sort can navigate the exercise area appropriately. In another example, using the same gym fitness type setting, having accessible exercise equipment available allows a person with a mobility limitation or any other type of disability to access the gym and the equipment and to participate in exercise. And so these are the types of questions that inclusive community health assessments like the CHI might include when you're assessing parts of your community, such as in this case, a local gym. And so our NICPAD project partners really created this tool, the Community Health Inclusion Index, and they shared the CHI with us as a part of this project and provided training to all of us in how to do that. And so, Angela, in thinking about back to the community health assessment process, can you give us some examples about how the CHI was conducted in the Oregon communities, and specifically really talk to us too about the role that you might have played as a state expert advisor for the two Oregon communities as they implemented the requirements of completing the assessment?
Sure. As the state expert, I provided technical assistance and support with completing the required components. So I helped the community coaches and coalitions, you know, understand the tool, the assessment tool. And I also served as a resource for the disability inclusion and accessibility components of the tool. And I did this primarily through regular scheduled phone calls with the team's community coaches and discussed the importance of conducting the assessments and ensuring that they crossed all sectors or the different sites, you know, like you mentioned, in order to give a comprehensive look at their community. And during those calls, we also discussed and we shared ideas about how to work successfully with their coalitions and sharing with them the importance of the CHI tool, and especially in how the CHI specifically focuses on disability inclusion and how that does make it a unique tool. And because it's a unique tool, it may be a tool that their healthy communities coalitions aren't familiar with. And so really giving them examples of how it's beneficial to have that disability inclusion lens. And then to talk a little bit about what a process both communities took. You know, one of the things that's beautiful about this project and really beneficial is that it is community driven. Both communities really worked independently with their local coalitions to determine the community sectors that they wanted to assess. And the sites that they ended up assessing ended up really reflecting the priorities of the people who made up the coalition. For example, in Umatilla County, their coalition was made up of primarily healthcare representatives and community members that experience disabilities and city officials, as well as some other members. And what they ended up focusing on were sites that were related primarily to healthcare, as well as sites that were in and around the city of Pendleton. And for Benton County, their coalition was made up of city officials and again, community members experienced disabilities, as well as Oregon State University students. The sites that they assessed were sort of more general recreation and leisure sites in and around the city of Corvallis, as well as some overall city planning within downtown Corvallis.
So in thinking about that, can you say maybe a few more words about what the health assessment process and the tool that we used ultimately provided to the community?
So for example, in Umatilla County, within the city of Pendleton. So what they found through their CHI assessment process in working, you know, specifically again with the city employees, is they were able to learn about some gaps that their community had around both access to healthy foods and physical activity within their community. What they found was that with the city of Pendleton, what they assessed their main city park. So they found a significant gap in how accessible the park's pathway is from the park's parking lot onto a paved walking trail that runs around the inside perimeter of the entire park and then also up to a covered picnic area. And so through this CHI process, they found that from the parking lot to get to the paved trail, there was no pavement. It was rocks and then grass. And so someone with that uses a mobility device, that was not accessible to them, or at least easily accessible to them to get to the path to then enjoy that trail all the way through the park and then also the covered picnic area. And then they also discovered in working with the city of Pendleton in looking at their, you know, city-sponsored events, like their annual concerts in the park, their local swimming pool, and things where the city provided refreshment or food, they found that there were not adequate healthy options, or actually not many options at all that were healthy. Through using the CHI, they were able to define that not only were there not, you know, healthy options, but they need to make sure that there's accessible healthy options at all of their city-sponsored events. So those were a couple of the gaps they were able to identify and then work through to make adjustments.
I think those are great examples of kind of what we wanted to see and how the assessment process really contributes to those final changes that are in communities and that are sustained over beyond the funding period. And really, some of those changes that you just described wouldn't be here had we not done an inclusive community assessment like using the CHI tool. And so in really kind of thinking about that for this project, you were the state expert advisor to these two communities, Benton and Umatilla County. But can you tell us how you've used this tool or are using the tool with others in the state of Oregon?
In Oregon, we currently are still using the CHI assessment tool, and I'll describe, you know, how that process and how we got to where we are today. Right after the original two-day summit meeting and some of the follow-up training webinars, I had the opportunity to share our newly launched project and the CHI assessment tool with our key state and community partners through various meetings and conference presentations. For example, I, you know, first shared the project with our office's advisory council. And through that sharing, one of our members of our council works for the Oregon Department of Human Services, Aging and People with Disabilities, or APD program. That advisory council member encouraged me to present at one of APD's annual conferences and to share the project. And it was at that conference that I met Joseph, who oversees the APD's 14 Disability Services Advisory Council, or what we call DSACs. And there are DSACs located throughout the state of Oregon. Joseph just loved how the project promoted and encouraged disability inclusivity through a process that involved both key stakeholders and local communities. And he felt that the project's assessment process and using the CHI could potentially be a great benefit to the DSACs. He believed this could be a great benefit for a couple reasons. One is the overall mission of the DSACs is to inform the Aging and People with Disabilities offices representatives on accessibility issues within the community, as well as to provide disability and inclusion awareness and education to local communities. So the DSACs provide guidance to the APD offices, but they also provide education to communities. So he saw this as a project that could benefit both the communities and the state level APD offices. And so what we did is we immediately put together some presentations on the project to share at the DSAC meetings to see if we could get buy-in and see what the DSAC members thought. And it was exciting. So we had a couple of DSACs that really liked the project. One of the DSACs decided that they wanted to use the CHI assessment tool to assess the local community colleges in their district, in their area. And then the other DSAC wanted to assess their aging and people with disability offices in their districts. They wanted to use the CHI tool for that. And they just actually, in the last 6 months, finished up all their assessments and are putting together a report. So that's a couple examples there of how we use the CHI thing. And then also, because of the successes with those two DSACs, Joseph is using those examples to help recruitment with other DSACs in more rural areas where recruitment's been more difficult. So he's seen that being able to show the successes with the DSACs that are using the assessment tool in hopes of recruiting new members to the rural DSACs.
I think that's a great example. And the reason why is because a lot of people may or may not realize that part of what makes the community health assessment process so interesting is that there are educational components built into the assessment tools that you might select that will help you increase awareness with community partners and key decision makers on certain aspects of what disability inclusion really is and what are some tangible examples that can be accomplished when you're trying to influence healthy living at the local level, such as how to make healthy eating accessible for, you know, all people, including persons with disabilities, and the same for physical activity, and really looking at the environments that we live in and trying to make those more conducive and accessible also. So I think this is a really good example of how parts of this assessment process really help educate others in your state at the state level, and then involve two local groups that are in addition to the two local groups the communities that we worked with. So I always love hearing some of those successes and really glad to have captured that in our conversation. And so, Angela, thinking about that, if there are other states and communities they're interested in doing an inclusive community health assessment, what type of advice would you give them? Or are there any particular successes or lessons learned that you've experienced that you think will be helpful for them to hear?
Yeah, I think I have a few things I'd like to share. One thing I really want to emphasize is the importance of conducting the community health assessment and involving coalition members and community partners throughout the entire assessment process. So I think this project really emphasizes one of the greatest benefits is that the assessment process is really successful in helping increase the awareness about the benefits of all community members being engaged in the process. So it's not just a couple of key people, but when you bring together a large group and get the community involved, it's just much more rich and the outcomes are a lot more impactful. Another thing that's beneficial about the project was how the CHI assessment really helps yield real-time data for the communities, which ensures that the, you know, healthy eating and physical activity strategies that are eventually developed are data-driven and that they address current and existing gaps. And those are, of course, you know, able to be identified because of the hands-on assessment process. That's really beneficial because you don't have people that are just guessing, you know, like, oh, I wonder where there's gaps and barriers. And, you know, they might not know really where they exist until they are able to utilize the CHI tool and really look at all the areas that, you know, there may be gaps and barriers. And another thing is they might not really know what's important. And by, you know, utilizing the community and utilizing the tool, that can help prioritize what's important for the community, and those gaps may have otherwise been missed. Let's see. Actually, another thing I'd like to share is that it's also really important to choose an assessment tool that includes a disability inclusion or accessibility lens so that people with disabilities are considered and included in all the healthy community efforts. For example, and this is something that we saw in both Benton and Umatilla County, is that it's really important to make sure that people with disabilities are participating members of the entire process. And so that includes, of course, right up front, being members of the coalition and the assessment team. So that's super important. I think lastly, one of the lessons learned that I feel is important that I want to share is the building the trust and the buy-in of the representatives of the community's entities that are involved in the assessment process. So from all the sectors where you want to assess the sites. So I know from our experience, and you know, when you have a coalition or a group of people that are really excited about a project they're working on, sometimes it's easy to assume that others will share in that excitement. I think we all know that's not always the case. And it's especially true when it's something that is maybe new to people and it's something they're not, you know, familiar with or they fully understand. And then they might not see all the benefits that something new like the Qi assessment tool, you know, may have. So I guess my advice would be to really understand that it can take time and patience and perseverance to get some of the community members buy-in and some of the sites that you want to assess their buy-in. But what we found is that when you have people who are passionate about the project and can show examples of successful outcomes, that, you know, the people that you want to work with and get their buy-in, that generally they'll be curious about it and they'll want to learn more, and that ultimately they want to contribute to the betterment of their communities as well. So I guess the bottom line is don't give up and keep trying.
I think that's great advice. I think any of us, sometimes we think about doing a community health assessment as daunting at first, and you've given us some really good tips for how to make sure that we're being inclusive. And I also really enjoyed hearing your conversation today and your experience with the tool that we chose, which was the Community Health Inclusion Index. So that will finish our conversation today for Phase 2 Assessment and Training. I want to thank Angela Weaver, who's our State Expert Advisor for Oregon, for her time and her expertise and insights today. I also want to thank our listeners for tuning into our conversation and really encourage everyone to listen to the next podcast, which will feature Dr. Meg Tracy, our State Expert Advisor from Montana, as we discuss Phase 3 of the Inclusive Healthy Communities Model, which is prioritization and planning.